Now, hey everybody, what's up? Sarah back again. Today I've got Mark Merzman from USA Financial. Woohoo!
Hey everyone, this is Sarah, and welcome to my show. Woohoo! Oh, yeah.
Hey Mark.
Sarah, how are you?
I'm doing great. So Mark is here to talk with us about how to use seminars to develop new client relationships. Now, you know me, I'm not the biggest fan of these dinner seminars, and I feel like it's because I view it as kind of antiquated. I'm also partially biased because as a mother of four children under 6 years old, I really never get out of the house to do anything fun for dinner. Dinner is like a not fun time. And then after that, I just collapse on the couch with no hope of recovery until the next morning. So the idea of like conducting a dinner seminar at night and using it to get business is kind of foreign to me, but I feel as if the world is moving this way anyways because of all the possibility for marketing online and getting an audience online. You know, I don't know if these things aren't a dinosaur that is kind of becoming more and more extinct as we speak, but Mark, you're here to tell me differently.
Well, I can tell you that in many ways, the dinner seminar is a bit of a dinosaur because, I mean, it has been around for a while. I think the better advisors today that are having success with this are looking at, all right, what was that, you know, the old crusty dinner seminar of 20 years ago, and how do we make it better today? And you know, there's certainly a lot of things from a tactical perspective in terms of getting people in the room that have changed a bit. You alluded to the idea of using online media, social media, that sort of thing to fill the room. That has certainly become, you know, over the past 2 or 3 years, a lot of the rage that we've seen from a marketing standpoint, using Facebook to fill a room. At the same time, we've also seen and heard and experienced a lot of frustration with using Facebook because the problem is that people aren't always as invested in going to it. You know, there's so much drop off when you use Facebook to fill a seminar room or to fill an event room. And you know, when
wait,
we talk
on,
about
Mark,
seminars,
wait, Mark, wait, I have to ask you something. Hold on, pause. Mark, what should the ratio be to of registrants to attendees typically? Because like, for example, on a webinar, I noticed that I only get about 40% of people who sign up actually listening live on the webinar. What is it for an in-person seminar?
So on the in-person side, a lot of it depends on the medium that you're using to fill the room. But if you're like, if you're using Facebook, for example, and if we're assuming that the audience is somebody that doesn't know you, you know, so it's not a warm audience already,
right,
but you're using it, you know, oftentimes we're going to see a show up ratio of 20% to 30%. And so that's a huge fall off, which is concerning, which is part of why oftentimes, you know, we're advocates of using direct mail. Your show up ratio with direct mail tends to be anywhere from 70% to 80%. And so it's a huge discrepancy.
But hold on there, Mark. Hold on. But in both cases, the person doesn't know you.
Correct.
So that's
they're much more invested in the process if you think about it here, and a lot of this is just my anecdotal experience that I'm kind of, as I've dissected this problem, because trust me, you know, I hear it all the time. Oh, this is so frustrating. What I think the reality is that on Facebook, if you're scrolling through or even an email or something to that effect, something catches your attention. Oh, here's this event. I'm kind of interested in it. I'll click a couple of buttons. And, you know, oftentimes if you do it right on Facebook, they don't even have to fill in their information. It's auto-filled for them and that sort of thing. So they can literally push a couple of buttons and they hardly, it's not a memorable experience. And they haven't, you know, if they're married, they haven't conferred with their spouse. Versus when you do a direct mail campaign, chances are they have that piece of mail, regardless of whether it's a postcard or an envelope or whatever it might be. It made an impression. If they're married, they spoke with their spouse. If they're going to bring a guest, they say, hey, I got this invite. What do you think about it? Should we go? And more often than not, they have to pick up the phone and make a call for a reservation. So they're way more invested in that reservation versus the reservation online that tends to be, everything on the internet is so, it's split second decision, click, click, boom, boom, onto the next video or whatever we're going to watch. Whereas, you get their attention and that invite sitting on their dinner table or their countertop, assuming it didn't immediately make it into the trash can, it's a little bit more of a memorable experience.
Okay.
That's my guess for why that show up rate is so different.
However, okay, so you get a higher show up rate, but the cost is higher.
Absolutely. So we will typically see, the cost to get a reservation through something like Facebook, and again, we're assuming a cold audience, if you will, might be anywhere from $20 to $40. Versus the cost to get a reservation when you do direct mail, direct response mail, might be anywhere from $80 to $200. So, when it all kind of comes out in the wash, what most advisors are concerned about is how much does it actually cost to get a qualified butt in the seat? That's really what I want to know the number to. And, oftentimes those numbers can get a little bit closer. The reason why Facebook can be frustrating, and I'm a big advocate of it, I still think that there's a huge place for it in the marketing plan. The reason why it can get frustrating is, you alluded to, if you are doing a dinner seminar, if you're feeding them, oftentimes you've got to commit to X number of meals, and there is nothing more frustrating than, buying and having to take home a bunch of chicken dinners that for people that stiffed you and didn't show up. So, what you want to focus on, though, is how can we improve that? Regardless of what way you choose to market and fill the event, how is it that you can stage an experience, an event experience that is going to take it out of the realm of that, that dinosaur that we talked about and into, boy, this feels like something different. And you want your attendees to walk away and say, man, this is unlike the other 8 events I've been to or 8 other dinner seminars, because, for any advisor that does this type of marketing, they know that a lot of people have chances are it's not the first seminar event they've ever been to. So now into how can we stage that experience?
Talk to me about that. What are 3 things that advisors can do when they get the people in the seats to wow them?
So there's really 5 stages that I would look at when you're designing an experience. And the first stage is enticing. So using the whatever method you're going to use to get them in front and get in front of them, rather, whether it's Facebook or what have you, you want to use something that's enticing, that's going to appeal, and you want to start to build a theme there. So I can tell you, we just did an event not long ago that was focused on, it was a blueprint. That was kind of the general theme for the event. It was the blueprint for executing a better business, et cetera, et cetera. Well, we built the entire experience and everything was designed around that. So from the enticing side, there is themed with the blueprint stuff. Then you get into the entering equation. So in this, what we're walking through and talking about right now, it doesn't just have to be, the traditional dinner seminar. You could certainly execute this with a client event, a referral event, or something to that effect. But the next phase is entering. Before they've actually walked in and sat down at one of the tables, you want to have something that starts to create this unique, wow, I feel like this is a big deal. Now, maybe it's going to be, if you're an advisor that hosts a podcast or hosts a radio show, mm-hmm. perhaps you're doing an actual live recording right outside the room. And so as they're kind of entering that stage, there's you with the headset, and wow, there's kind of that experience there that they're starting to see. And you have your mm-hmm. registration table, and you know, whoever's going to be manning or womaning that registration table yeah. says, oh, this is, you know, this is Joe. This is, he'll be the speaker, but he, right now he's hosting a podcast live, or he's doing this, or she's doing that. And so you kind of start to create a little buzz, or maybe you'll have the chance to have a photographer there. And, you know, if you think about events that have photographers, they're always kind of nicer events. I mean, typically speaking, a photographer is there for a wedding or a nice event. So things that you can do there that when they're entering, they feel like, oh, wow. And what you want to, you know, ideally the next phase, shifting from entering into the during and the actual experience there, rather than having them go and find, you know, giving them a name tag and having them go and find their seat at a table, do a little homework on them and stage the experience. And if in advance you find out that their favorite beverage is such and such, or their favorite candy is a Kit Kat bar or something, you know, if their interests are sailing or something to that effect, have a magazine related to sailing, and rather than telling them to go in and find a seat, telling them to say, you know, we've reserved a special seat for you. It's at table 6. I think you'll be able to find, you know, and identify which seat is yours.
Yeah.
And you know, you've created a personal experience.
Yep. I love this. I love hearing this. Once I was calling on somebody and I found out, and he was really kind of hard to crack. Cold, standoffish. So I called up his administrative assistant. I called his office and I said, what is he like? What is he into? And she said, motorcycles. So I got the guy mm-hmm. a book off Amazon all about the history of motorcycles, and I mailed it yep. and I got an email with the signed contract.
I'll share with you the coolest marketing thing that I've had happen to me. Mm-hmm. I went to Michigan State University, and I'm a sports fan, and you can identify that pretty easily if you look on my LinkedIn page type of thing. And I had a gentleman who was recruiting. He was trying to solicit my business he did event management for like big arenas and that stuff, and wanted to sell us booths and boxes, if you will. Uh-huh. And his approach to me, he sent me an autographed picture of Magic Johnson in the 1979 NCAA Michigan State Championship game. And you want to talk about the impact that it made on me, very mm-hmm. personalized. Now, he could have sent that thing to you and you wouldn't have cared at all. But for me, it was this, wow, he went out of his way to identify an interest of mine. He personalized it. And I felt obligated to reach out and say thank you and initiate the conversation.
Nobody does it. 0.5% of people in the marketing profession will actually do this.
Everybody listening to this is going to hear and agree, this is a great idea. It's in the execution that everybody falls short. And honestly, it doesn't take that much, especially now with the internet the way that it is. And I mean,
so many people, most people, even if they're not on LinkedIn, they're not active on LinkedIn, they're totally boring on LinkedIn. You go to Facebook and they've got like, here we are at the family cookout, here we are with the kids at the game, you know, here we are. I mean, there's so much public information. It's very hard. I would say very few of us actually have a scarcity of information about us through some public media on the internet.
The other thing that one of the things that we had done for our event was, you know, once an attendee was registered, we specifically asked them a few questions, and they weren't overly personal, but we asked them a little bit. Hey, we'd like to create an experience for you. We're looking forward to having you join us. Would you mind, you know, answering a couple of quick questions? And, you know, simple as finding out, you know, what kind of candy bars do you like? Who's your favorite musician? You know, I mean, you know, you got to keep it within reason, depending on who you're going to ask and what you might do with the information. And you don't want to get too personal, but most people are willing to offer that sort of thing up. And especially if you ask it in the right way, I'll tell you what, it's not that difficult. And you can literally spend an extra $5 or $10 per attendee that's going to be there. And it will dramatically increase your conversion. I'd rather have 20 people in a room that I can create a personalized, unique experience for them at an event than 50 people that I can't connect with at all and you know, impact or wow, if you will. And
I hear you on that. It's totally quality over quantity. So now carry it through to after the event. What are some tips for follow-up after events?
So one of the things that you want to think about is the exiting stage. So when they're exiting the event, what is it that you can do to make it more memorable? And perhaps that's going to be a personal handwritten note that you've written ahead of time and handed it to them before they exit. You know, as a special thank you for joining. You know, oftentimes advisors, especially for the traditional seminar where they're prospecting, the only one, it's very clear that the only thing that they're focused on is trying to get an appointment. If you shift that focus to all of a sudden showing appreciation and a thank you for sharing some time with you, all of a sudden their mindset changed. I mean, you alluded to it just in the intro. You hardly have time, you know. I have three little kids too, so I know exactly what you're saying. Meals for me in a dinner, good golly, it's, you know, it's a struggle just to
a babysitter,
to get
you gotta worry about separation anxiety, and then you get home and your house looks like a hurricane hit it. And the kids aren't even in bed. Like, they're not wearing the right pajamas. It just, that throws like your whole week off. Just one night.
So find a way to exit, have them exit before they walk out officially, and they're exiting the event. Find a way to do something that's unique. And that's why in an ideal world, you can create a theme for the event, whatever it might be, whether it's, you know, the blueprint theme or whether you're going to have, you can get creative. I would encourage you to think about your own personality and what fits for you and what is the theme that you can create that you can own. And it can be the same theme that you do for every financial event, and you kind of just plot out what the experience is going to be like and you go from there. And then from there, you have to build and think about the extending part. How can we get them 2 days later, 5 days later, 2 weeks later to be thinking about that event again? How can we remind them? And maybe it's as simple as a book that stays true to your theme that you might send to them, or a video that you recorded that either, you know, is going to say something to them on the theme and remind them of the event. And, you know, this is especially true for those that may not have decided to come in and sit down with you. You know, don't just discard those folks as, you know, people that aren't interested. They were interested enough to spend time with you. And as much as there's this plate liquor phenomenon out there, and I understand that those people do exist, the reality is that people don't have that much free time to just give away. And if they do, if you show them a unique and different experience and you extend it through and you follow through and you show them and you wow them, that plate liquor, I can't tell you how many times I've heard the plate liquor, quote unquote, turning into a client.
Or a referral source. Or they tell someone about you.
Yeah.
It's like, what else do you want? Like, they sat there in the room. They sat there in the room with you. They gave you a chance, for goodness sake.
If it's a different experience than every other dinosaur seminar event is, that plate liquor, you know, I hate to use that term because it seems so derogatory, but that person all of a sudden does become, wow, a person that was a different event. And like you said, even if they might not become a client, they might tell their neighbor, said, I've been to about 48 of these things, that one was definitely different.
Right.
And how can we find a way to differentiate it, create that theme, extend the message, think about how we can continue to extend it, build on a theme. One of the things that we've done with this event, a lot of the event that we did, I mentioned the blueprint, was kind of focused on construction and building and measuring and valuing. As a part of extending, was we sent a tape measure out to the attendees. And along with the tape measure, there was a little story about the importance of measuring things and, you know, why we do the things that we do. And just to keep it fresh in their mind, something that we talked about at the event, that weeks later, it was a reminder again, oh yeah, that was a powerful event. I did remember that discussion on, and we gave them another piece of value that extended the event even beyond, you know, just the day of.
Yep. Okay, Mark, listen, this has been great. Thank you so much for your time and for your contribution to the show. Definitely some actionable tips, and I really want you advisors who are doing this to give some thought to what he said. So if you want to know Mark's contact information, I'm going to put it in the show notes. Thank you for being with us, everybody. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Woo!